the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We have a special guest today, Andrew Donaldson, who is a writer at The Ordinary Times. Andrew is a native of West Virginia and based here in North Carolina now. One of my good friends. Glad to have him on the show today. Brooke is out. Andrew, how's it going?
I'm doing really well. Can't complain at all with the circumstances. So it's chaos like everybody else, but we're managing the best we can. So just keep going forward. I'm excited. I'm glad to get to talk to you again, my friend. I always enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you know, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but my son, who's three, had a big scary head incident. And I know you and others on Twitter were praying for him. And it just was, man, head injuries and little kids are very scary. And I'm just so fortunate to get a good report and a good outcome from that, because it was as a parent, in dealing with something like that that I haven't really dealt with before, it completely changes your outlook on life and your world. And man, I'm just so fortunate in having a good outcome. So I'm excited that you're here. I'm excited to talk a little bit about what's going on in North Carolina and the nation and this upcoming election, which is really only a few months away.
It is. It really snuck up on us in some ways, even though we've been, you know, like you and me, where we watch this election stuff all the time. It seems like it was just last April and we were talking about, is Biden going to get in? Is he not going to get in? And here we are. 90 days left till we actually vote. So it's upon us, and amazingly 90 days out. And I don't know that we know anything more now than we did last April. It's an amazing time to be alive, and certainly a unique election in our lifetimes.
Absolutely. Just real quick, before we jump into the election stuff, we've got Cooper yesterday who had a press conference, and as expected, he extended phase two till September 11th at least. I mean, that will be the very least that we are in phase two in North Carolina, so nothing changes. Restaurant capacities all stay the same. Mask requirements, for the most part, I think they're just the same. And this is, of course, going to affect the college football stadiums in North Carolina. But it really wasn't unexpected, because I think several states followed that model, and Louisiana being one, I think. And there's some other states that have kind of staying on path with North Carolina. Michigan is another. So what is your kind of thought on Cooper's decision? Was it just sort of an inevitable decision he had to make, or – do you feel like there's some politics wrapped up in this? I mean, there's politics and everything now, but what was your kind of initial thoughts when you saw and heard of that decision?
Well, I think he did probably the only thing he could do, to be fair to him, is just let's give it five more weeks and see where it goes, which is probably the prudent decision at this point. We're seeing now in New York where they're talking about doing checkpoints and things. It's really watching to see when this current kind of spike in the southern states starts to ebb off, and can you keep it ebbed off? So with the way the state was, and with schools getting ready to start in North Carolina on the 17th, most of them are going to start on the 17th virtually. It just kind of made sense to, okay, well, let's just do what we're doing for a while. It seems like he's maybe learned a little as he's gone. We've kind of backed off some of the sillier stuff where they were trying to split hairs on. You see what's going on in New York now. It's like, well, what constitutes a sandwich at a bar? And can we eat chicken? It seems like maybe we've done this. We've found a little bit of a happy medium here of wear your mask, do this. So we've at least skipped some of that. So credit where it's due that he's at least not doing anything too crazy. But it seems like it's all you can really do right now from a governing level of what we're doing seems to be working okay. North Carolina's kind of in the middle bottom of cases right now. Let's keep doing it, see where it goes from there, see how the school stuff affects things, see how the change of the weather changes things, and then go from there. So I don't know that he really had any other choice.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, just from a political standpoint, I do think that you're right. He didn't really have much of another choice in this. Obviously, there's a lot of businesses that are still affected. There's a lot of economic hardships that people across the state are facing. Unemployment is still a huge issue in North Carolina. I mean, I get updates from the unemployment map, and you may know more about this than I do, but the western part of the state seems to be impacted even more than our areas, the Triad and the eastern part of the state. And that might be because there's a little bit more of a hospitality economy in the western part of the state with visitors and tourists. But it's just troubling to just, and the heartbreak with so many people who are still out of work really bothers me. It eats away at me because, you know, I've been somebody who's been out of work at one point in my life, and it's a struggle. It's a grind. And I just feel sorry for so many people because it's in some respects and in a lot of respects, it's really outside of their hands. So I know that the Congress, U.S. Congress, is trying to work out a negotiated deal on a further stimulus and, of course, extending unemployment too. And it'll be interesting what unfolds with that, especially with a $26.5 trillion debt. It just all kind of weighs on us and stresses us, Andrew.
Well, I just talked to a friend of mine this morning about this same thing. He's like, I'm okay with work now, but I don't know what's going to happen this fall. You talk about the tourism stuff. North Carolina has a lot of diversity to it, but where you have, you know, the Raleigh and the Research Triangle and even Greensboro and places like that, where they have, you know, all this upcoming tech stuff and business models where you have a lot of people that can work remotely and do things like that. But then you have the beach economy, our buddy Joe that you talk to every week, you know, every day it's something in the New Hanover County area, the western part of the state, which I love. We went to Maggie Valley in the western part of North Carolina when I was growing up almost every summer. I love that part of the area, but the tourist areas are just getting killed with this sort of stuff. And then even everywhere else, you know, it's the service industry type jobs. The waiters, the restaurant people, those folks are just taking a beating in this economy. And there just doesn't seem to be like there's going to be a whole lot of relief coming anytime soon. Even, you know, one of my favorite restaurants, local place, family run place, you know, we try to go and make sure we support them. And they're even saying, they're like, yeah, this is all takeout. We can't take care of our waiters. We've had to cut staff, even though we're keeping the business going, because we just don't need them. Everything's takeout now. The business model's changed. There's a lot of those sort of things that are going to linger even after this, the COVID part of it backs off a little bit, I'm afraid. And then you have what's coming up with the end of the fiscal year. We have state and local municipalities that have their budgeting due 1 October. How's that going to affect the economy? It's a lot of uncertainty. And if you don't have an economy running, it's just going to cascade all these other societal issues we're having right now. And I just don't see that we're going to have an end to this problem anytime soon. Congress has known since at least March, April that, you know, the funding was going to run out. And they just apparently seem very content to do nothing. It's not good, and it's very troubling, and it's a lot of real world pain for a whole lot of people that are just kind of stuck in limbo right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's depressing to watch. And it's starting to feel like Groundhog's Day. I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with that movie. And it just kind of, the grind goes on and on with no end in sight, at least, you know, in the short term. I know that there's been a lot of promising efforts with the vaccine. And, you're seeing stuff leaking out that a vaccine is going to be ready maybe in early 2021. And that's promising news, but it is. It's like a lot of these governors, especially, you know, maybe more so the Democrat governors, are almost intent on keeping their states shut down until this vaccine is ready. And that poses a lot of problems just from an economic standpoint. I get the thinking to some degree, but I also, you know, the unintended consequences from the hit on the economy, people losing their jobs, people potentially losing their homes, and things like that is just heartbreaking. And so it's something that we will continue to cover at Civitas, of course. And let's transition to this governor's campaign, because look, I mean, I think a lot of times, Andrew, we look at the governor's races and they're obviously important, but they've really been magnified with the stay-at-home orders and all the other executive orders that have come from governors today, it really has a drastic impact upon our life. I mean, depending on who your governor is, more so than the president's. And, you know, you hear that famous quote from Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. Well, it's even more so today than maybe in the past because of these decisions that the governors are making. They have such an impact on our life. What do you kind of see happening in this governor's race between Cooper and Forrest? I mean, Cooper has basically had a double-digit lead, including some of the Civitas polls, for a long time now. I think that'll tighten, but it's an uphill battle, I think, for Forrest to maybe unseat Cooper here in 2020.
Yeah, and it's one of those things with Cooper. I just don't know what's going to change this race from what it's been, because it's been very, very steady since the primary, and we knew it was going to be Forrest, although we kind of pretty much assumed it was going to be Forrest versus Cooper. It's been kind of the same gap polling-wise pretty steadily. So it's like, well, okay, something's going to have to happen to change the race. The things that would have happened normally now aren't going to happen because of COVID. Remember, originally we were going to have the Republican National Convention here in North Carolina. It was supposed to be in Charlotte. That's a whole lot of press. You would have had, Forrest would have had a prominent spot. They would have tried to uplift him on the national stage a little bit. That's not going to happen for him. Cooper has been out in front like any disaster, even like a hurricane and thing like that. There's kind of this, you know, rally around your government to a small extent. Cooper's been able to be in front of the media all the time and put his leadership, whether you agree or not, he's out in front leading the state right now. That doesn't help Forrest. So Forrest had a lot of things outside of his control kind of banned up against him. But on top of that, there's just not a lot going on in the race because everybody's obsessed with the COVID stuff, and rightly so. So is anything going to happen to change the race between now and November? Well, we have the back to school stuff that we've all been talking about, you've been talking about, I've been writing and talking a lot about it. If the school stuff goes very, very poorly, does that affect the race? Does the economic outlook in October, the end of the fiscal year, the state level stuff with North Carolina's one of the better positioned stuff. They were in a good position going into this crisis, but a lot of local municipalities are not, depending on how well they're managed. Like you were saying, this crisis is showing a lot of how your management of government is going. Governor Cooper is balanced off by a Republican legislator, so it kind of keeps him maybe a little bit more moderate in his governorship than it normally would be. So he has that going on. But a lot of these local and municipal elections are going to be coming up. People are seeing firsthand how their government locally, like the Tip O'Neill quote you had, how their government locally is handling this crisis. How does that affect people when they go to the polls? And then, of course, the big thing in the room with the election is this is a presidential election year. You know, Governor Cooper and Dan Forrest are on the ticket with Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So how they do in the state is going to affect how that happens in the governor's race. I don't think it's going to affect it 8 to 12 points that Cooper seems to be up most of the time. But if things start happening, things get really ugly in the fall, if that closes up to 4, 5, 6 points, then who knows? You might have a tighter race than it looks right now.
Yeah, and 10% of Trump voters in North Carolina ended up voting for Cooper in 2016. So it'll be interesting to see how that margin shrinks as well. I mean, I think it'll come down a little bit, but it may not be dramatic. I think the challenge for Forrest, and, you know, he's always kind of been seen as someone who's a little bit more right of center than many of your candidates that run statewide. And, you know, is he able to kind of effectively reach those suburban moms, to reach some of the suburban households that may be a little bit more moderate, but traditionally vote Republican? And I don't know if that's possible for him. I mean, I think it is possible, but I don't know if he's running the type of campaign where that's going to turn out for him, because he's running a very grassroots-oriented campaign. I mean, he was, in fairness, the top vote getter in North Carolina in 2016. He even got more votes than Trump, but that was in a lieutenant governor's race where people don't necessarily pay attention as much, and they just went with the incumbent. And he was, kind of known as a solid conservative alternative to a more left-wing candidate in that race. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of cut in. I do think that race is going to close, but it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of reach the sort of, you know, voters that are more swing voters, and if he's able to cut into that. And you're right, if there's any kind of chaos with schools, it'll certainly help him. if Trump, he's kind of taken some pot shots at Cooper, that could potentially help him. Because I expect Trump, whether he wins the general election or not, I expect him to win North Carolina actually somewhat fairly easily. And so, you know, I could be wrong about that, but we'll see. But I do want to pivot to this 2020 race also just between Trump and Biden, because it's so fascinating. You have two candidates that aren't very well liked by a lot of people. Certainly they have a lot of supporters, but they aren't very – I had to go up to Traverse City, Michigan, Andrew, to see my first Joe Biden sign on a lawn. And I actually did see it in the urban area of Traverse City, Michigan. I saw my first Joe Biden sign. But it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out, because I don't think this is a race is over at all. I mean, we've got lots of polls where Biden's up 12, 13, 10, 11, 12. I know Rasmussen, who tends to, at least in recent history, favor Republican candidates, has the race tighter. But what do you see happening? Because we're in such a different election year. You mentioned the conventions that are different. What do you see happening in this race in the final months? I mean, it's just so different than what we're accustomed to. And I know Trump still has a lot of money on hand. What do you see unfolding in the next month or two here, Andrew?
I said all since last April when Joe Biden got in and this race actually started. I always said the same thing until about January, February this year. I said the same thing. People's like, well, what do you think? Is Trump going to get reelected or not? And I'm like, tell me what the economy's doing. Well, now we know the economy is going to be historically bad, but we have all these other factors involved too. There's a couple things here besides just chasing the polling number. And we had a bunch of new polling this morning for the, I think our buddy Vira and me was the one that says beware all August polling. It's always wrong. It's probably good advice. We have an incumbent president. The race is probably going to tighten up. There's a couple factors here that we need to really touch on for the presidential race. Factor number one is Joe Biden is the Democratic nominee. How did that happen? Well, Joe Biden, right after Iowa, was broke, had no support, came in fourth in Iowa, and was basically written off as dead as a candidate. And then within a month, South Carolina happens, and the race all of a sudden in a two-week period is over. The base of the Democratic primary electorate took a hard look at Bernie Sanders being their nominee, and the Democratic Socialist rising is probably too hard because we saw what happened, but saw what was happening with that, and they ran, not walked, to the polls to support Joe Biden. You know, we were talking earlier today on Twitter with some of our other friends. There's a difference between popularity and having a constituency. There was a bunch of people in the Democratic primary that had popularity, but Joe Biden had the constituency. And he wrapped that thing up quick when everybody just kind of coalesced and grabbed him. So there's the question with Biden is the enthusiasm, record-setting enthusiasm for Biden in those primaries in March. Does that carry into November? Now, the conventional wisdom is, well, of course it's Trump. Everybody hates Trump on the left, da-da-da-da-da. I don't know, because if you lose a fraction of those people, you start losing 3-5% of that record turnout. Now the race starts tightening again. So does all that enthusiasm against Bernie Sanders in the primary, is that going to transfer to the general election voters? That's the first point. The second point, of course, is one that you talk about all the Trump. You know, President Trump is a live wire, and who knows what he does day in and day out. Does he do something that really changes the effects? You think we're probably his base is built in at this point. He's probably not going to lose anybody else that he hasn't already lost. Does he start gaining people? And then the other thing we have is, how are these debates going to affect? Normally, I don't know that debates move the needle a whole lot, but they're going to have a lot of focus on these debates because there's been all the talk about Joe Biden, and we know he's a gaffe machine. You and I are a little bit older, so we can actually remember the first two times that Joe Biden ran, and how gaffes and the plagiarism scandals and those things, how those haven't changed over time. He's still a gaffe machine. And then Donald Trump, who knows what he's going to say at any moment. So if you have virtual debates or some kind of weird debate set up, you know, does that give us something beyond just a soundbite that really changes the entire race? And then back to repeat again, what is going to happen societally, culturally, with this COVID stuff in the next 90 days. Is the schools going to melt down, or are they going to kind of find an equilibrium and the school system is going to be okay? Does the economy at least look like it has some kind of shimmer of hope going into the new year? We've never seen an election like this in our lifetime. And then finally, to put a bow on all this, is we don't even know how we're going to elect the president right now. It looks like a lot of the mail-in voting, absentee voting, these sort of things are becoming a real issue. We had the Postal Service stuff that came out this week about, you know, what's going on with the Postal Service. You know, we're really maybe looking at a 2000 situation where we don't know who the president is come Thanksgiving. Are we going to know by Christmas? Will we know by January who won this election? There's a lot going on here. I'd more comfortable just saying, man, I don't know. And I think people that need to be honest need to just say, I don't know, because polls are all good and well, but we're way off the map on this election, man. So I'm just going to say, I don't know.
No, there's so much to respond to there. I mean, first of all, you know, I think some people on the right, and certainly a lot of Trump supporters, are hoping that there's a silent majority kind of underneath the surface that's just going to explode by the election. And, you know, I was up in rural Michigan, and I remember in 2016 thinking, I don't think Trump's going to win. I think it'll be a close race. But 2016, I was like, I think Hillary's going to win at least the Electoral College. And when I started driving in rural North Carolina for the first time, and in rural West Virginia and rural Virginia, I just started seeing these homemade Trump signs everywhere and lock her up signs. And that was the first time I thought, hey, maybe there's a chance here for Trump to sneak in. And there was, obviously. And I was up in rural Michigan just a few weeks ago, and I started seeing again, not necessarily the homemade signs, but I started seeing Trump signs, Trump flags again. But I've also heard of loyal Trump supporters from 2016 who've kind of abandoned him now, which is kind of interesting to me. They're not as enthused for his candidacy this time. Maybe they felt like he's broken some promises, whether it's the wall or something else, to some degree. So I'm fascinated to see what happens. And I agree with you on the potential chaos of the election. I know that some people are more optimistic. I'm not an alarmist, but I'm very concerned long-term how many more peaceful elections we have in this country with the amount of division and divisiveness we have now. And I do see a lot of problems, especially if you're going to have massive amounts of mail-in voting. I could see potential attorney generals or secretary of states acting a little bit nefarious with some of the tabulation or just the counting of ballots at some points in some states, because I do think we've entered an era where the means justify the end, so to speak. And people feel like they're doing the right thing if they're helping their party or they're helping their candidate win. And so that's a concern to me, just how many more peaceful elections we have in this country. I do think this race is going to tighten up considerably. I think, you haven't had Trump unload on Biden yet. There's lots of gaffes from the past. There's lots of statements from early in his career. I mean, his first run, I think, was the early 70s, right before the Watergate era in Delaware, of course. He's been around for a long time. He's got a lot of statements that could be troublesome in this era today. Of course, he was a big anti-busing candidate, which he created some statements from that could be troubling to some communities today. But it'll be fascinating to see how this all unloads. I mean, Dukakis in late July was up on George H.W. Bush in 1988, coming out of his convention with his bounce by 17 points. So this could potentially swing. I mean, I have no doubts about that. And Trump does have a lot of cash on hand. I think he's going to go very negative on Biden. So it'll be fascinating to watch, because we're in this whole COVID era, which just shakes things up. I know the economy's bad generally, but the stock market has held up pretty well. And there are some optimistic signs, at least once we get a vaccine in place, where, you know, things could rebound quickly. But that may not be in time for Trump's campaign. But who knows what happens? I mean, it's all very fascinating to me. And it's going to be, I think, a tight race again. And I think you're going to see in some areas of the country another surge for Trump, whether that means he'll be able to hold on to some places in the Midwest, I think remains in question. But I do think you'll see a lot of his supporters energized again.
I think the silent majority in 2016. And this is the question we're going to get answered this campaign. The silent majority that surprised everybody and got Trump over the line and got him the presidency was the anti-Hillary sentiment. And it wasn't just the right wing. There was quite a few traditional Democrat. You talked about West Virginia. I'm from West Virginia. West Virginia is blue dog, what we used to call the blue dog Democrat territory. All the, even as deep red as in now, West Virginia is still a Democrat registered state by 8 or 9 points. It's going down, yeah. But it's still a Democrat state. Those are the people that showed up for Trump that normally had been Democrats in the past. But there was that anti-Hillary sentiment, and that's not on the ballot this time. And that's why you see the Trump campaign's kind of been retooling now. Just throwing it's me or the left against Biden hasn't been as effective as it was against Hillary, because there's not that visceral dislike as a candidate that Hillary had, although Biden obviously has his issues, but it's not the same. It's not to the Hillary level. So they don't have that going into this campaign. Now, does that suddenly develop because of Joe Biden's VP pick, which should be coming out? And people are freaking out over the VP pick, by the way. Biden was announced on the 23rd of August. Everybody just settle down a little bit. Okay. They've known who his VP is going to be for months. Just everybody calm down. He'll get his VP out. But if he goes for a more harder progressive, do those attacks start having more stick to them? Those things can affect it. And then, you know, not to just keep harping on it, but I don't know that we've ever had, since maybe the Depression and World War II, the societal upheaval. It was one thing when all the schools went virtual in the spring, and my kids are more school age, yours are a little bit younger. You know, my children have now been home since the middle of February, and we're into August now. And they're going to be there at least through the first 9 weeks now. So we're looking at October before, and I'm in a position where I'm home anyway, so it didn't affect my family quite as harshly. Two-parent working households, single moms, single dads, single parents. One stat that don't get talked about is the grandparents that raise their children and now have to figure out how to do online learning and all these sorts of things. Where do those people start falling? Do they get disillusioned and just don't show up to vote? Do they get driven to the polls because of what's going on? These are the things we don't really have metrics and we don't have history on. So then how does that shake out? And how those people, you know, we talk about undecided voters. I don't think those are undecided voters, but I think how voters get motivated between now and November is going to turn which way this election goes pretty quickly.
Oh, no doubt. It's going to be tight. I just feel like it's going to tighten up for this reason, Andrew. I feel like Trump is going to go pretty negative on Biden. And I do think there's a concern on the right. Is that going to stick? Is that going to be effective? And I don't know for sure, because Biden, you know, at times in his career was more moderate. I do think that there's a perception now that he might just be I don't want to say empty suit. You know, a lot of us are making fun on social media about some of Biden's comments. He's stuck in the basement a little bit. I think Trump needs to draw him out, certainly get him in those debates. Of course, Trump's no master at the debates either, but I do think he needs to draw him out and get him a little bit more in the limelight, if that's going to be possible with all this COVID stuff going on. I don't know for sure, but I do think this race is going to tighten up dramatically when we get into September, October, November, when I think he's going to start to unload on Biden. There's a lot of material there. There's a lot of stuff to dig up. And it'll be interesting to see if sort of the Trump hatred's enough to carry Biden over the finish line. It may be enough, and I don't know. But any final thoughts for North Carolina, their nation? I mean, you follow a lot more news, maybe even more than I do. Just what's going on. I mean, it's a very troubling time, but there's a lot to be optimistic about in the United States. I mean, we've got so many pharmaceutical companies working on a vaccine. We also have improvements when it comes to just treatments on COVID-19. I hear reports that less and less people are going on ventilators. And of course, I think you were on a ventilator and talked about that at one point. It's something you never want to do. And I know it's saving lives, and hospitals are not you know, I was in the emergency room and I didn't see too many people in the hospital. And I know that hospitals, for the most part, are under capacity still. But do you have any kind of final thoughts to wrap us up as where we go forward from here, irregardless of what you're, I just said the word irregardless on a podcast.
Yeah, we'll dock it out of your pay.
Regardless of what happens in this 2020 election, I mean, going forward.
I think, let's do this because I do way too much politics and it's good for me too, but there has been underneath all this on social media and in our, we have some overlap in our social media friends on Twitter. There is some good stuff happening out there. If you know where to look, you'll see things like there's kind of been this running joke on social media about the COVID has had its stages. It's had the what do we do stage, and then it had the bread baking stage, and then it had these stages of things of people trying things and doing things. And I hope maybe when we're done with this, there'll be some perspective out of hard. Anytime you have hard times, hopefully it gives you some perspective and experience for the future. Like what you said with your son. I can go look at that. I retweeted it when you sent it out, and I sent you a message like, you know, you okay? Is there anything you do? I can send that out, and people of all political stripes immediately praying for your son, pulling for your son, let us know. There's a lot of good people out there, and one thing with crisis like this is, yeah, the election's going to be really important, but we can still have, we talk about the people from the Depression era and the World War II era, and oh, they had this amazing sense of community and stuff. It's like, let's not just automatically assume and give up that all the social media stuff is the real world and that folks aren't going to come out of this with a sense of, man, when the sky fell, this neighbor over here was really there for me. Or, hey, when I was tough on my job, these folks over here made sure I had an extra meal. Or when my son got hurt and I had to go to the ER, these people on Twitter that sometimes make fun of my politics, they were very quick to pray for my kid. So I think we can do a little bit of positive out of this. It's like, you know, the election's going to be what it is. Politics are what they are. The volume of all of it's going to be what it is. But even in this crisis and with people really, really hurting, there's a lot of really good humanity that comes out of that if we just know where to look for it and spend that little extra time to make sure we're on the good part of that humanity and not on the part of humanity that's making things worse.
Great words. You know, I think obviously our media divides us, you know, the corporate media and 24-hour news cycle divides us in many ways, but I think we're more linked and more united in many respects than we would believe otherwise with some of the stories and just division out there. You can follow Andrew at for the fire on Twitter. He's a good person to follow. He will interact with you. He will engage with you. That's at F-O-U-R for the numerical letter for the fire. So follow Andrew and continue to follow Civitas. We will continue to cover this election. We will continue to cover state policy in North Carolina. So we appreciate your time today. And Andrew, I just hope you have a great week, and blessings to your kids and family as well, buddy.
Yeah, you too. And everybody just stay safe and keep your head down from the crazy. And I appreciate you, my friend.